Good morning and welcome to the March 21st, 2007 Floor Time Foundation's web radio program, Infants, Children, and Families, featuring Dr. Stanley Greenspan.
Good morning. Welcome to our web-based radio show, and thank you for joining us today. Today we have a very interesting topic. We're going to be talking about actually something that you may not expect, but one that I think you'll find very interesting. We're going to actually start off talking about the elderly. But since many of the elderly are grandparents, and they have a vital and important influence on children, it fits into our broad theme. But there's a similarity between the elderly experiencing memory loss, between children, particularly infants and toddlers who are not yet speaking or using ideas to any great degree, between children with developmental problems who are not yet at the level of using ideas, though they may be older, 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 year olds. And I also want to draw a parallel. This may have implications for adults with traumatic brain injuries who lose their ability to speak or use ideas, hopefully temporarily. We're seeing a lot of that now with war veterans who've been in traumatic situations. You may be asking yourself, what do all these groups have in common? And what they have in common is the subject for today's show. And that is the reliance on pre-verbal or pre-ideational or pre-symbolic memory and experience. And the recognition of the existence of experience that occurs outside the realm of ideas that can be remembered in a profound way through one's emotions has very important implications for how we help and create healing relationships for the elderly with memory loss, for children who have developmental challenges, for young children who aren't yet at the level of language and ideas, and even possibly for individuals who've had traumatic brain injuries where they've lost their ability to use ideas or speak temporarily. And it's because of these important implications for how we help individuals that we're going to go into this subject today. Now, let me start off with an anecdote. I just heard this past week that stirred me to want to make this the topic for today. A colleague was telling me about a relative, a 95-year-old gentleman, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease and had lots of memory loss, and frequently is confused about where they are and who's taking care of them, etc. And this elderly gentleman, though, who I've had a chance to see periodically because of, in social gatherings, always has a big smile on his face and always seems happy. And he has his wife, who's with him, but there's also a helper who's there for 6-7 hours a day. An elderly gentleman, actually a little bit younger, gentleman in his late 60s, who is a kind of companion and helper who's quite in good health and helps with some of the physical things and the eating and the grooming and so forth. This person is a person of a very good spirit and affect, always joking, always positive, very warm, very nurturing, and clearly has a good relationship with our elderly gentleman who we'll call Robert. And whenever Harold, who's his Robert's companion, the 68-year-old who helps care for him, comes over, there's a big smile on Robert's face. Big, broad smile. And he's always a gleam in his eye. He always lights up. Yet, if you ask him who Robert is, he can't tell you. He can talk and tell you about wanting, you know, to eat or vital needs, but wouldn't be able to tell you Robert's name. However, when Robert was ill for a couple of days, 2 weeks ago, our elderly gentleman looked very sad and depressed and was forlorn, almost like a baby who's without his mommy for a couple of days, and was less functional, walked less, expressed less words to get his basic needs met, seemed more preoccupied, and his wife was quite concerned. When Robert came back, when Harold came back, the smile returned, and there was a smile of recognition. Lots of wives who are very nurturing and warm and supportive have told me about their husbands who have Alzheimer's, that he doesn't know who anyone in the family is anymore, doesn't know the children's names, but always recognizes me and gives me a big smile and always seems reassured when I'm there. And some of my colleagues think, oh, well, this is simply, you know, a fantasy on the wife's part. But I disagree strongly. I think there is that strong recognition, just as Robert has it for Harold, and I should add his wife as well, that where there's a good nurturing relationship, the person, even with the memory loss and who can't remember who it is caring for them, is able to somehow have that recognition memory. Now here's the situation that arose that made this vignette very interesting. Robert has had Alzheimer's for at least 10 years that it's been known to his family. He's living in a retirement village with a little bit of supports built in, but recently was wandering around aimlessly on the grounds, not fully clothed, and the psychiatrist, consultant to the facility, evaluated him and gave him a, quote, diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And then they said, well, we're not equipped to care for Alzheimer's. We don't have the technical expertise here. You know, therefore, you should consider whether another place would be better. I didn't say he has to leave, but just said, you know, this one's not the ideal place for him now that he has Alzheimer's disease. Again, parenthesis, he's had it for 10 years. And he's familiar with the physical surroundings. You know, obviously likes his apartment. His wife does too. And is doing well with Harold. And these things happen periodically where he does get lost. It just happens this time it was on the grounds. It's happened in other places too when they visited relatives, for example. And the family was ready to move him to another city to be close to, quote, extended family. So he was going to, instead of being down south where it's nice and warm, he was going to come up to the East Coast, up to the Northeast, and live in one of the major cities of the Northeast with one of his children and the child's, the wife of his male child's extended family, where he could receive better care, and there'd be either in-home nursing care or a nursing home, et cetera, et cetera, and that would be much better, and he would be the family was convinced that he'd be a much happier camper. But the one little caveat, the one little glitch in it was he'd lose Harold, because Harold lives down south and, you know, wouldn't be prepared to move with this. And I was hearing about this story quite as not really even asking my advice. It was just kind of letting me know about this interesting situation. Fortunately, Robert's wife had the intuition and the gumption and the assertiveness to say, to veto the plan and say, Harold is too important to Robert. We can't do this. We're staying right here. And the family was in a dilemma because Robert's wife is quite a forceful personality, and many members of the family don't like her because of that. And there are some of the younger Turks in the family, some of the children of Robert's children who are, you know, expressing, well, he's, you know, the sort of strict medical opinion. Well, he's got to be in a care, in an Alzheimer's specialty care facility where he can get proper care, etc. So this family is at a crossroads. Can you guess what I recommended? Well, I said to the family, to the person I was speaking to, it was one of the children, I said, Harold is the key person here. Do not separate them. I said, he will deteriorate. He probably won't survive emotionally, and he may, therefore, his physical health may deteriorate. And everyone will say, well, he's 95, and, you know, and it was his time anyhow. But in fact, we, you know, the process will have been speeded up considerably by a profound loss at this age. Now, so then this person I was talking to, who's a friend of mine, said, well, but he doesn't know anyone. He doesn't recognize anyone. I said, he recognizes Harold. He recognizes his wife. He remembers them. He knows them. He knows them in a far deeper way than if he could express their names in words. And what is this deeper way? I said, he has an emotional feeling about them. And this gets to the nature of pre-verbal experience and how we organize it. Go back now for a moment, and let me just parenthetically say that this was not based on simply theory. I can think of five cases on each side of the ledger. One where the relationships that the person had was respected, and kept, and the person with Alzheimer's or other reasons for severe memory loss was kept in a very nurturing, physically supportive setting that was familiar to them, where there was no change physically or with the nurturing caretakers who were very good. And these individuals always had a smile on their face. They did well. They had some physical illnesses, but they basically stayed fairly healthy until some natural event, you know, and some took their lives. Some are still kicking and doing pretty well, well into their 90s. In five other instances where there was a change of individuals and physical location, there was deterioration in every single case. Strong illustrative example was a woman who had been a vet, who actually had very little family support because she had never married or had children of her own, but had been a very successful career woman. And a friend of hers, a much younger friend, was helping look after her. And she had an in-home nurse who was taking care of her. And as soon as she went to a nursing home facility, quote, because of her greater medical needs, she started getting pneumonias and she started being physically ill. Her memory deteriorated very rapidly. She'd also been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but it took a downward curve very quickly. And within a year, she'd passed away. And that's a typical story. So coming back to Robert and Harold, what is Robert actually experiencing when he lights up and he sees Harold? And why is Robert's wife so adamant about keeping Harold in the picture? Go back for a moment to our six stages of development. Remember, four of these stages have to do with pre-verbal experience. The basic sense of security that comes from being regulated and calm and focusing and attending. the engagement you have with a primary caregiver where you feel nurtured and cared for, and a four-month-old baby lights up, the back-and-forth emotional signaling where you can express your needs and your desires and your wants and your feelings, and someone responds to it, and you know you exist as an entity because you're getting feedback through smiles and smirks and sounds back. And then the shared social problem solving, where you're pointing, showing, using some single words perhaps, and someone's responding to you. And again, you're getting that back and forth pre-verbal communication and solving problems together. That gives you a sense of being able to master your environment. The sense of self as an entity is becoming established or affirmed by the fact that you're operating in larger patterns and you have expectations for the emotional responses of the other. They have expectations for your emotional responses, and you're involved in this back and forth interaction. All people that are familiar with one another and have very good relationships in marriage or in friendship experience these first four levels. They're secure with one another, they're engaged, and feel a sense of intimacy. They read and respond to each other's emotional signals, which helps define who they are and what their wants and desires are. And they problem solve together and operate in larger patterns where they negotiate, which gives them a larger sense of who they are as a person. They know when to expect annoyance, when to expect support, when to expect pride and admiration, all as part of this larger pattern of social interaction and shared social problem solving. So these all occur before ideas become established, and all infants and toddlers experience these levels. Now, what happens in cases of memory loss, it's you lose it from the top down. It starts off with losing your ideas, with your higher level abstract and logical thinking and your memory for ideas. And for most people, even with Alzheimer's, but as well as other forms of memory loss, and many individuals with traumatic brain injuries, the pre-ideational organization of the central nervous system, the brain and the mind, still organizes emotional experience. So if you look at the brain and the way it's organized, you have your basic survival parts of the brain that have to do with breathing and matters of that kind in your lower part of the brain. Then you have the emotional parts of the brain, the limbic system, for example. And that organizes lots of emotional experience and emotional reactions, from starting with more primitive fight-flight reactions to more elaborate, what you know have been described as bonding, or really forming intimacy, patterns of intimacy. And then you have your higher cortical, with your planning and sequencing and your prefrontal cortex and your recording of auditory verbal language in your left side of your brain, and your visual spatial symbolic experiences is often on the right side of the brain, but as many of these are shared between the different parts of the brain. So the brain is kind of organized hierarchically to some degree, although there's lots of communication between all parts of the brain. And we can think of the mind as organized according to our six levels, which corresponds nicely to the way actually the brain gets myelinated if you look at an infant and young child. So the thesis here we're suggesting is that the first four levels of the mind are intact for Robert. So he recognizes Harold. He experiences Harold in terms of the security of the first level, in terms of the intimacy of the second level, in terms of the emotional signaling that he gets from of the third level, and a lot of shared social problem solving of the fourth level. This taps into, in terms of his brain functioning, the basic lower parts of the brain having to do with breathing and regulation and survival, the middle parts having to do with emotions and organization of emotions, and components of the cortical parts, like the prefrontal cortex has to do with some sequencing and problem solving, but not the higher symbolic centers that have to do with memory. So some of the hippocampus functions that communicate with the higher cortex in terms of memory are not functioning well, obviously. Now, in the later stages of Alzheimer's, sometimes all the parts of the brain deteriorate, including the parts that support basic functions, like breathing and eating, and then we often have rapid deterioration in physical health. But that often is a very late stage in the illness, and many individuals with memory loss for years and years and years, thank God, never get to that part. So the thesis, again, is that Robert and many like Robert are very, very, very attuned to their emotional worlds and have very good memories of them, but not in words and not in ideas, but in terms of emotional experience. Just like a 15-month-old has emotional experience, or a nonverbal 3 or 4-year-old. Now, if the emotional experience is just as valid, and in some ways even more intense because you don't have the verbal abilities or the symbolic abilities to negotiate with your world, you're, in a sense, more of an emotional being because you can't use ideas to kind of camouflage your own emotions. You can't hide from them. You can't pretend you don't feel something. You can't cover up. And also, you can't request things as easily verbally. And so if someone you love and you depend on isn't there, you're feeling helpless more easily. You're more likely to go into panic because of your emotional dependency. Now, this thesis that we're talking about is supported and emphasized when we look at what happens in children in hospitals. Back in the 1940s, it was first recognized that when children were separated from parents for a couple of weeks to go to a hospital, and the parents the family lived a good deal away, and they didn't have the parents there with the child, the children got depressed and morose, and their emotional and physical health deteriorated to some degree. The Robertsons, a well-known couple, made films of children in hospitals showing these profound reactions. Bowlby and Spitz, two well-known pioneers in infant research way back in the 1940s, also documented what happens to children in orphanages and hospitals, and coined the term hospitalism for children who were well-fed and well-cared for physically, but not didn't have that constant nurturing figure, and many of them failed to gain weight or had, quote, failure to thrive. Others failed to develop language or physically adequately in other ways, and others developed physically in terms of motor skills, but were very promiscuous and lacked the capacity for intimacy, so became somewhat antisocial. They were coping with their environment, but without that intimacy of the nurturing relationship. So we've documented this to a clear degree in infants and young children. And we've certainly seen in infants and young children, even in families where there's been a lot of emotional deprivation, we see the same reactions now. And we see this in some of the children from orphanages where there isn't a constant nurturing figure. They have many features similar to children with autistic spectrum disorders where the problems exist more for biological reasons. But in the orphanage situation, it's because of emotional deprivation, but yet produces a very similar picture. So we have lots of evidence that emotional experience is very important pre-verbally, pre-ideationally. And it's no less important for the elderly, and probably no less important for those with traumatic brain injuries. Now, what implications does this have for what we call healing relationships? For the elderly, but also for children from orphanages or for individuals with traumatic brain injuries. I think it establishes a number of principles that we need to pay attention to, that we don't pay attention to in our society. The fact that this very well-to-do family with three very successful children were ready to move this elderly gentleman from his relationship with Harold, and that was being supported by a local psychiatrist to do this, shows that there is not yet full agreement and full understanding of the importance of these early emotional experiences. And the justification was, well, he doesn't know what's going on anyhow. And that's hardly the case. He knows what's going on. He just can't experience it at the level of ideas or logical thinking, but emotionally is in a sense knows it even better than a very verbal person would. As does a 15-month-old toddler when they lose their mommy. Every parent has had the experience of coming back from a trip a week away and their toddler giving them the cold shoulder and not talking, not looking at them for 2 or 3 days or at least a few hours and being negative. Well, that's not by chance. That's I'm angry and you stopped existing for me. That's what that's expressing. So what are the principles in terms of intervention that this suggests? Well, here are the principles. Is one, that the more memory loss there is in an elderly individual, the more important it is for, this is principle one, to have a primary nurturing relationship with a person who's very nurturing, very supportive, brings a gleam to the person's eye, which means that whether it's in a nursing home or in your own home, there needs to be a Harold for every Robert. And that person should be constant. So nursing homes need to do a lot to keep the individuals and not reassign them to different floors. For daycare, it means not shifting a year one and year two and year three to different primary caregivers for children who are spending 30 or 40 hours in a daycare center. Keep that primary nurturing relationship cooking, because they're the mommy and daddy to a baby. A baby mind. That's principle number one. Principle number two, and every length should be taken to maintain that, and that should be given the first priority, because that will determine physical health as well as emotional and intellectual health. So if you're going to put someone, quote, in an Alzheimer's facility to get better care so they have better intellectual or physical health, you won't do that if you separate a Robert from a Harold. You'll be doing just the opposite, even though your intent is to protect the physical health. Much better off in this case, in a less well-equipped place and bringing in the doctor from the outside if necessary for extra care or consultants for extra care, and having Rob and Harold together. Principle number two. Because loss of functioning comes from the top down, support the areas of functioning that are still functioning well so that they don't deteriorate and we don't lose them. Which means in Robert's case, but in most cases, supporting the pre-verbal levels of experience. And how do we do that? Well, these are sub-points, A, B, C, D, under principle number two. Which means support regulation and security through lots of very soothing, relaxing sensory experiences. Just like we do infant massage with an infant, every elderly person or a person with traumatic brain injury should be having the equivalent of infant massage, adult massage. Lots of tactile input, lots of soothing verbal chit-chat, lots of soothing visual experiences. And the key is to adapt this to the individual. If the individual is hyper alert or vigilant, it's very soothing and quiet. If the individual is a little withdrawn and self-absorbed, it's a little more energetic, just like we do with babies. The massage, some individuals like it firm pressure, others like lighter touch. But body massage by a skilled person, either with firmer or more surface, lots of chit-chat and talking in a soothing voice and rhythm, trying to get the individual's attention, soothing visual experiences. So help the person attend to the world, be calm and regulated. Also, that nurturing relationship. Have a person hours and hours a day who, with the individual, being with them, whether it's sitting and holding their hand, doing the massage work, helping feed and bathe, and also just interacting. Little smiles, little smirks, and doing what we call floor time activities, which is like we would do with a 4-month-old baby who's, let's say, nonverbal. We might just play playful games, making funny faces and trying to get their attention and seeing how long we can keep a back and forth interaction going. And this gets us to the third level, exchange emotional signals. Be communicative at the level of gesturing as well as words. If the person's verbal, but only in the here and now and only in the moment, as Robert is, doesn't remember what he asked for a minute ago or what he'll want 2 minutes from now, use the words too, use gestures and words. And do a lot of shared social problem solving. Get physically active, move around, find things, get things, have the person participate in their own care, but with you as an active partner. So don't just do for the person, let the person be passive, but rather, we want juice. Where's the fridge? So not stay in bed because we're afraid you'll trip. Let's get up and go to the fridge and get some juice. Do you want a glass of milk? Let's do that together. Where is that? Play dumb. Let the person see if they remember. If they can't, give them two choices. Do you think it's here or here? The same thing we would do with a healthy toddler. That involves a lot of exchanging of social and emotional signals, exchanging some words, if the person's verbal, in the here and now, as well as pointing and gesturing and problem solving together. It's a very respectful attitude. So don't do for, do together with. Challenge the assertiveness and initiative. It leads to a sense of self-respect and a sense of organization. So basically what we want to do is support those first four levels, from sensory massage and visual and auditory, and also I should mention smell and taste, experiment with different textures, to lots of intimacy and consistency of that nurturing adult in the person's life, to lots of exchanges of emotional signals and shared social problem solving. And as much as possible, preserve that verbal ability that is there. Use it. Use it to empower the person to make choices that have to do with things they like, games they may want to see, TV show they may want to watch, food choices. Give them choices. Let them think. Don't play to memorize scripts. Play to opinions and choices. What they like, what they don't like, what they want, what they don't want. Have long conversations. And usually this can be combined together. So if the person is verbal, as many individuals with memory loss are, but in the here and now, not yet, over time, work in the here and now with opinions and choices. Who they like, what they like, what they want, what they don't want, why they want this or not want that. And do it in a very soothing, nurturing way. Very much the same way we work with children. So this is the... These are the principles of care. And if we do this with our elderly and give this top priority, the emotional consistency. And I should also say, as another principle, keep the physical environment constant. Don't change the physical environment. So if there is a home that's familiar, better to have nursing care in the home. This means flexible insurance coverage and plans. And so it's less expensive also, far better. And the health will be far better than a nursing home, which you may think you need for health reasons. But much better to have nursing care in the home, or much better to just have a helper in the home and a nurse come in periodically for medication checks or physical health checks. Again, it'll be much less expensive. You can have a nurse cover 10 families this way with some aides or helpers in the home, helping with practical things. So use the home environment. If you're going to use a nursing home, make sure it's a very nurturing place that the person gets used to. and gets to know, and there's familiarity, and their furniture goes with them, and the room gets set up in a familiar way. But as much as possible, keep the physical setting the same, keep the individuals the same, and by all means, nurturing, sweet, giving people should be involved in the caretaking and the caregiving. So these are some of the principles that make for healthy, happy babies, make for and will help our elderly stay healthy for longer periods of time, and is probably very, very important in the recovery of traumatic brain injuries as well, particularly gradually exposing to more and more sensory and motor and language experience in the context of these first four levels of development. So the conclusion is experience exists, whether you can talk about it or not. It's emotional experience that exists, and healing relationships tune into these first four levels and respect them. And I'm hoping that Robert and Harold stay together for a long time, that the family has the wisdom not to overrule Robert's wife and bring him up north where he'll lose the person who's been keeping him with a big smile on his face for these many years. Okay, thank you for tuning in, and we'll speak to you next week.